Taco Palenque fans, we have something special for you. Try the Casero Taco now for only $2.75 Monday through Thursday. Flavor packed with premium sirloin rice and refried beans. Only at Taco Palenque. At participating locations for limited time, not valid for delivery. Other restrictions may apply.
From a highly secure network of top secret locations across South Texas, this is the Spurs Insider brought to you by Taco Palenque. I'm your host, Mike Finger, joined by our Express News panel of Spurs beat writers, Tom Orsborn and Jeff McDonald, with sports editor Nick Talbot. And in the sports world, there's a big thing is thinking about what ifs, right? Like, what if this player would have been drafted instead of that one? What if this ball had gone in instead of that, and instead of not going in? What if this play had been called instead of that play? The trickle-down impact. And I can't help but wondering about the big what if of the 2023-24 San Antonio Spurs. If they had played 40 games against Kevin Durant, the Phoenix Suns, what would we be talking about today, Jeff McDonald? How big of a deal would that have been?
Oh, it'd have been huge. Adam Silver screwed them. They should have played the Suns 40 times. They've won 75% of their games against the Phoenix Suns since Victor Wembanyama arrived, but they don't even need Victor Wembanyama to win all those games. They beat the Suns when Victor Wembanyama had a career-high 38 points, and they beat the Suns when Victor Wembanyama didn't even play.
There's another what-if here, too, Mike.
What's that?
What if Jeremy had been the closer all year?
Jeremy Sochan, you mean?
Thoughts. Yes.
Well, I think there's been instances of him trying to be that and not quite doing as well as he did in the fourth game against the Phoenix Suns. But we're doing this week's podcast on a bit of we're starting on a high note. We try to end on a high note every week. We're starting on a high note because the local Cagers, for the third time in four games against Phoenix this year, look like a playoff team. You think back, Tom, to you know, ages and ages and ages ago, to us sitting in that media room.
They work until June.
Well, and the Footprint Center, and Dwayne Rankin of the Phoenix paper comes in and says, you guys are going to be working till June.
Well,
and if they've been to play Phoenix every night, that might be the case.
It's baseball season again, too.
That's true. The Spurs are good against the Suns when baseball is being played.
Exactly.
The section in between, not so much. But I've been on NCAA tournament duty, and I did not make it to the Frost Bank Center last night. But you guys can take over here and talk about just it seemed like pandemonium. You know, the crowd looked into it. The Spurs were closing, looking great down the stretch. The Suns had multiple chances to kind of do what teams have done against the Spurs all year and come away in the end with a victory, but they didn't do it. The Spurs held on. How did it happen?
The final 30 seconds, Jeremy Sochan makes a three-pointer, and Kevin Durant and Devin Booker miss three-pointers. And I just wonder what kind of odds Jonte Porter could have got on that.
Well, it almost begs the question of does U.S. integrity, does Adam Silver need to look into Devin Booker and Kevin Durant here? whether they had anything involved. I don't know. I'm joking. It's just a joke. It's so absurd that it brings up those questions.
Jeremy Sochan had – well, I don't know where you want to start. Let's start about it. It was a tale of two games at the foot. I was going to say the Footprint Center, the Frost Bank Center.
What a great lead that would have been
if we still wrote game stories. But anyway, you know, two nights before, Phoenix just routed these guys, and it didn't even look difficult. Like, it didn't even look like Phoenix was really trying that hard. Barely broke a sweat. It was just like, you know, Kevin Durant frees himself for some open jumpers, boom, boom, boom. And now it's Devin Booker's turn, boom, boom, boom. Spurs were never in that game, lose by 25. Come back two nights later without Victor. You know, same two teams, except one is missing Victor Wembanyama. And the Spurs played better. And were in it. It was pandemonium the whole time. You had a big game from Jeremy Sohan, which I think we should talk about him later. Devin Vassell had a big bounce back game from 2 points in the loss to 26 in the win. You had Keldon Johnson throwing in some big points.
Zach Collins
looking great as a Victor Wembanyama replacement. And it all came together. And there's really the last three times Victor's been on the shelf, the Spurs have looked like a competent basketball outfit. And I don't know what to make of that. I mean, I have some thoughts, but, you know, they almost beat Sacramento without him on the road. Two nights later, they beat Golden State on the road without him. And now they've beaten Kevin Durant, Devin Booker, Bradley Beal, and the Suns without him. They looked like a competent basketball team in all three of those games.
I have a theory that I think you might share. And
I think there's a couple things at play there, but go ahead.
It's not to belittle what the local Cagers did, because they play. You have to play great to win the NBA. You have to play well. But we mentioned this dynamic on this podcast before. Teams are up for Victor Wembanyama when he plays because he is the future face of the league and he gets all this attention. And when he's out, I'm not sure you have the full 100% attention of the opponent on those nights.
I think that is absolutely part of that equation.
Yeah, Bradley Beal said as much. Came in, thought it was going to be easy, no Wemby. And then they got their ass kicked, he said.
The other part of the equation, I think, is when...
Well, this podcast is not TV. It's not TVMA, but we need to put a parental advisory on it. We just had some blue language in there from Tom Osborne. I guess he's quoting Bradley Beal, but
yes. And as I used to tell my parents, it's in the Bible. That word's in the Bible.
There you go.
So
where did I get you
here. Yeah. The other part of the equation when Wemby isn't there is the Spurs play differently, and that's not a good thing or a bad thing, but they have to play differently. Number one. Number two, I think when Victor's there, there's been this thing among some segments of Spurs fans about, like, they don't get him the ball. They don't run the offense through him. They don't look for him on lobs. But I think sometimes it's the opposite. They are so hyper-focused on, we got to get Victor the ball. We got to throw this lob. We can't miss him. I bet there's enterprising young data sleuth wanted to go back through the film, I bet you could find tons of turnovers this year that are not Victor committing the turnovers themselves, but other Spurs trying to force in the ball because they're just hyper-focused on, we got to get Victor the ball. And when he's not there, they sort of just play like they did last year. And it's the same team from last year, which was not a great team, but they did win 22 games and not 16 games. And so I think they can revert to playing how they were last year. They're a little looser, a little freer. They're not overthinking things. You couple that with the other team sort of letting down a little bit because there's not a 7'3 alien in the way. And I think it lends itself to occasionally having some competitive games in that situation. The Spurs were 0-6 and really 0-7 if you count Sacramento starting this year without Victor. So it's really been two in a row that they've won without him. So it's not been like a season-long trend. But lately, they've played well without him, and that's borne itself out.
Yeah, that was reflected in just 7 turnovers last night as well.
So are we saying the Spurs made the wrong draft pick this season?
Or did they have the wrong guys around him? Who knows?
Well, I'm obviously not arguing that they made the wrong draft pick. That was a jokey joke, too.
Of course.
You had some cogent, well-thought-out analysis there. I agree with all of it. In passing there, I think you mentioned, and there's 4 people on this podcast, and you said that you needed, I think, a enterprising young data sleuth to go through something. And I'm not sure any of us fit any of those words, whether it's enterprising young or data sleuth. So we'll just have to trust that what you suggested is correct.
I'm outsourcing it to the group, to the crowdsourcing is what we're going for. Anyone out there in listener land who wants to go through tape of every Spurs possession this season and count the number of turnovers the Spurs committed while trying to force the ball to Victor Wembanyama, we'd appreciate it.
I see a lot of hands going up.
We're not going to pay for it, but we appreciate it.
No, and if you just say a lot, like, we're going to trust you on that. I think
they could say any number.
To use a data term, I think the description is just a lot. I think that's the number.
Crap ton.
We're staying.
Crap ton.
We're really looking for that parental advisory on this. I think that'll bump up our numbers if
friend
people think
podcast,
that it's explicit.
Friend of the podcast, Paul Garcia, now in El Paso, might be able to handle that chore.
Yeah. Paul Garcia, by the way, shout out to him and his diligent chronicling of double-digit leads and records when double-digit leads are either held or held by the Spurs or their opponents. It's really another friend of the podcast, Andrew Lopez, did a story not too long ago about how big leads aren't big leads in the NBA anymore. And it's really staggering. I'm not sure where I'm going with this. It's just kind of a podcast aside. But if you're behind by 10 points in an NBA game, if you're ahead by 15, it does not matter anymore. It's crazy. And I know the Spurs are an extreme example of it. But as Steve Kerr said a few weeks ago in San Francisco, like 7 is the new 12. Or is it the other way around? 12 is the new 7.
Yeah,
15
yeah.
is the new 12. It just doesn't. What was the biggest lead or deficit in that game last night?
Actually, it was only 11.
11.
Was it only 11? Yeah.
Your Spurs led by 11.
Yeah, and it came down to the end.
Came down to the end.
Friday, they were up by 17 against Memphis.
Oh, that did not. I don't know if we need to go back to that. That could have been a. That was not a good loss for the local Cagers. I don't.
Many ways, yeah.
Many ways.
Do we?
Do you want to hit that real quick? Just to review the draft permutations.
Just a bullet point. They lost the game, and I guess if you're talking the Spurs' own draft pick, that's fine to lose a game. I mean, it'll enhance your chances probably, but
not by much.
But not by much. There might be a little a fight for Charlotte for fourth to last coming up, but we'll see how that goes. But the loss also against Memphis, it vaulted Memphis. Tell me if I got this right.
You want me to do it?
Yeah, you do it. I just lost my train of thought. I'm stuck. Never mind. I'm just going
to
say
the Spurs own the rights thanks to a Thad Young trade.
No, this is the Poeltl trade.
This is the Poeltl trade. The Poeltl trade gave the Spurs the rights to the Thad Young ended up being Chicago, right? Anyway, the Jakob Poeltl trade gave the Spurs the rights to the Toronto Raptors' first-round pick either this year or next year or I think maybe even a third year. But each year, it is protected 1 through 6. And this is not based on how they finish in the standings, but it's after the lottery, and that's an important factor to consider. It's an important part of this. We've gotten several questions from listeners out there about this. So leading into this home stretch of the NBA season, while like the Houston Rockets and Golden State Warriors are fighting for that 10th seed and the Thunder and the Nuggets are fighting for the number one seed, well, the Raptors and the Memphis Grizzlies have the 6th and 7th worst records in the whole NBA. And so when the Spurs face the Grizzlies, they sort of want to beat the Grizzlies. They definitely want to beat the Grizzlies because the Spurs are kind of where they are anyway. It doesn't matter to their draft status that much. But if the Grizzlies finish with a better record than the Raptors, then that means the Raptors are down at 6. And if those results hold to form in the lottery, the Spurs don't get that draft pick. So now as it is, after that Memphis victory, Memphis has the 7th worst record in the league. Toronto has the 6th worst record in the league. If the lottery goes to form, the Spurs would not get that pick, and it would bump forward to next year, also top 6 protected. There's different levels of this. You could say this year's draft isn't as good as next year's, so maybe that's not the worst thing in the world, but it's kind of a bird in the hand is better than two in the bush type of deal. I think most GMs would want the pick as soon as they can get it, so you can get your guy and start developing them. There's also the mathematical odds of of whether or not the Spurs get that pick, whether or not Toronto holds on to that sixth pick. I think even if they're even though they have the sixth worst record in the league, it's still like a coin flip whether they fall to seven or not. Like, there's still a chance the Spurs could get it. But long story short, the Spurs losing to Memphis could have cost them. There's a conceivable chance the Spurs could lose out on Toronto's pick this year.
They have one more game against Memphis to maybe make it right.
Yeah.
This floored me because I didn't realize it until I was putting together a little preview box this week. The Spurs have not beaten Memphis since before COVID.
Wow.
So I think it's up to 13 in a row now.
13 in a row.
13 in a row. Almost as many games as Toronto has lost in a row. Toronto hasn't won since early March. Been 3 weeks. So not like Raptors are heating it up and really going for it here.
And I think one reason
this has not been the grindhouse era of the Grizzlies either.
The one reason you want that Toronto pick now is, do we really think Toronto's going to get better next year? Like, they're probably going to be worse.
That's the other
issue. It's going to be harder to grab that pick next year, I think. But anyway, do we want to talk about Jeremy Sochan now? I want to talk about Jeremy Sochan. What do we, if you're Greg Popovich, Brian Wright, we saw this guy go for 26 points, a career best 18 rebounds, hits the game-winning shot, plays pretty great defense against Kevin Durant and a little bit against Devin Booker. If you're Brian Wright, Greg Popovich, the powers that be at the Spurs, what do you make of this guy? Like, what do you make of this guy looking at what he did last night and just his season as a total? Where do you go with him from here? Which version of him are you getting going forward?
I think since you posed this question, you should be the first to answer it, since it seems like you've thought about it.
I haven't, because I don't know. He's the most perplexing player on the team for sure.
He gives enough versions like last night against the Suns to make you want to hold on and believe.
But then there's some where he's like, it's like the two Bobs from Office Space. Like, what would you say you do here?
Yeah.
You know, like I guess I'll just admit this, like sitting around waiting for Shoot Around to open yesterday, you know, you just talk with other reporters, just shooting the breeze or whatnot. And we were talking about, like, you know, who did we expect to take a big leap this year that just didn't? And Jeremy was the first name that came up, and we're kind of wondering, what do you do with him going forward? Like, can you even have him on this roster if he's going to be the, you know, what would you say you do here, Jeremy? And then, of course, he comes out that night and shows you why he belongs on this roster and what he can do. But the inconsistency is still kind of, I was going to say baffling, but it's not. It's probably easily explainable, but it does make it difficult to project what you're going to get from him next year and the year after that. I mean, the reason he's inconsistent, I think, is he's 20 years old.
Yeah.
Not only is he 20, I mean, he's younger than a lot of rookies. He's younger than the Thompson twins. Are we just going to give up on the Thompson twins? He's younger than Brandon Miller. He's younger than Chet Holmgren, who was in his own draft class. But still, he's not only is he 20, he's a young 20. So I guess you've got to wait and see what happens next. But the inconsistency is something that has to smooth itself out, because he has nights like last night and then nights where you forget he was a lottery pick.
When you're in this position that the Spurs are in, which is still several years away from contention, you're evaluating what you have, you're deciding on your next steps, you have all kinds of draft picks, you have all kinds of cap space. I think what you do with a player like Jeremy Sochan is you constantly evaluate whether you value him more than other teams do, if that makes any sense. If there's a team that really, really likes him, and you don't think that he can become what another team thinks he can become, well, then you have to start entertaining possibilities. But I don't think you put him on the trade market and just say this guy's available or anything. I think it's a constant sort of process of just making sure that he, I guess that you sort of that you believe in him, but also that I think you know what I'm saying. Like if you don't say this guy's available and we're taking the best deal we get for him. I don't think you ever do that with Jeremy, a 20-year-old guy who was a top 10 pick just a year and a half ago.
You have,
but if you want to, if there's a superstar out there or a difference making player that you think you can acquire, and that team really likes Jeremy Sochan, I think that's when the decision becomes difficult. But I don't think we're at a point where we're saying, let's see what we can get with it for this kid.
You never trade a guy on a rookie scale contract just to trade him.
Right.
Because you're never going to get equal value for him. You know, you got to make salaries match. And the guys on the rookie scale deals don't make much. So I don't have the numbers in front of him, but what does Jeremy make? $5 million, $6 million, something like that? You're not going to get much for a $5 million, $6 million player coming back. I think you have a year where before you really have to start making some decisions with him and everybody in that draft class, Malachi Branham and Blake Wesley included. And you have them under their – you've already picked up their options for next season. You have them under contract for a pretty reasonable rookie rate. But it'll be the summer after next where you have to decide, extend these guys or don't extend these guys. We saw what they did with Devin Vassell in October, big extension. That's coming up for those three guys of the 2022 class, summer after the one coming up. So I guess 2025. And that's when you have to decide, or do we see these people as part of the longer term part of this, or is it time to cut bait? So I think you've got next season to evaluate what you have in him. And you see it sometimes, and I think defensively he's been pretty solid all year long. The Spurs don't, Wimby is Wimby, but outside of that, the Spurs don't have a guy like Jeremy Sochan who's going to go compete against Kevin Durant. And maybe Kevin Durant goes 12 of 17 for 29 points, but Jeremy's going to make him work for it. And then maybe by the fourth quarter, Kevin's 1 of 6 or something, So, he's a perplexing player. It's hard to give up on a lottery pick, and I'm not suggesting the Spurs should do that. I think you still see how he can fit, and he does have ways he can fit. He's a pretty good connective piece. He does some of the dirty work, some little things. He's going to guard guys, as we mentioned, that other guys aren't going to guard. So he does have a role. Hopefully his shooting will improve. It's just hard to play in this day and age if you can't consistently shoot.
How many had he missed before the game winner? How many threes in a row had he missed?
Well, in this game, he was 0 for 6, but he had not made a three-pointer since March 19th against Dallas. So dating to that, he had missed 16 three-point shots in a row. Before the game winner, which this is very Jeremy Sochan-like, before the game winner, he was calling for the ball anyway. He was 0 of 16, but he had his hands up kind of clapping for the ball. Devin Vassell gave it to him, made the right basketball play, and, Jeremy knocked it down. There are some ways – I'm thinking how I want to phrase this. There are some ways in which Jeremy Sochan is a mentally tough player, and that's one way. One way he displays that is that he's going to take that shot whether he's missed 16 of them in a row or not. And it worked out for the Spurs on a Monday night.
I think to expound on what you were talking about and how he fits in, how all these guys fit in to what the Spurs are building, in a way, other teams might make these decisions for the Spurs, and I don't mean the Spurs are just going to submit to whatever other teams offer, but at some point in the next couple of years, the Spurs are going to get into trade discussions with some teams who might be looking to sell off their all-star type players. And in those trade discussions, the Spurs are going to find out who those teams value that are on the Spurs roster right now. And I don't think that there's any player not named Victor Wembanyama that the Spurs would consider untouchable in a trade for a guy capable of being a second star with Victor Wembanyama. So if the Spurs are talking to Team X about All-Star Y. And Team X says, hey, we really like Devin Vassell. And no matter, and if we're going to trade you All-Star Y, we really want Devin Vassell in the deal. I don't think the Spurs are in a situation where they'd say absolutely not. And I think that's probably true of Jeremy Sochan. I think if there's a Team X that like really likes Malachi Branham, like we would, like every deal has to have Malachi Branham in it, I think the Spurs would be okay. We can work with you on this. So in a way, like some of the Victor Wembanyama supporting pieces who play the best might be the most likely to leave, if that makes sense, because they'd be the ones that teams want. Now, it could also be just all about just give me all your draft picks. And in that case, it wouldn't matter as much. But to kind of tie the bow on the Sochan conversation, I think there's a lot to like there. There's a lot to be concerned about. And we probably need another, not next week, but next year to determine how he fits in.
All right, there we go.
Tom, great, do you have anything to add? Tom,
great game last night, though. Great game last night, though.
Tom might have.
Yeah.
Tom's got a plane to catch.
Yeah. Jeremy, I mean, you just see last night just shows what he can be. And it's just too early to give up on that.
Wow.
He's got his faults, but just I think they're going to.
I think what you can say about that game last night, it's not like he did something that's difficult to replicate. It's not like he went out there and hit six threes. He made one three. Everything else he did was within the flow of the game. It was in the paint. It was layups. It was dunks. It was defense. It was hitting the boards with, you know, reckless abandon. All that stuff, he can replicate. It's not like he just had a hot shooting night.
That's actually a good point, Jeff.
Thank you. I think a lot of it with him, and maybe it's like this for a lot of young players his age. It's just when he's engaged, he's really good. And that's sort of a backhand compliment because it infers that sometimes he's not really engaged. And the trick with the NBA is being engaged 82 nights a year. It's a hard thing to do. And sometimes you think only the great ones can really do that 82 nights a year. But as close to 82 nights a year as a player like Sochan can remain engaged and in the game, I think you're going to see a lot better results. And I think, you know, hopefully as he matures, as he gets older, as he learns that about the league, I think the Spurs can be hopeful that there's more consistency to come from him.
You know who's engaged every time out?
Princess of Wales.
Oh, man. No, we're not doing that. We're not. That would help our searches, but we're not doing that. And, you know, thoughts and prayers. But who's engaged every time out is...
Taylor and Travis Kelce. They're engaged. You heard it here first.
No. A good friend of the podcast we talked about last week, Cedric Golden, who was featured on, you know, we talked about
I wonder how he's doing.
An incident that happened at the Moody Center last week, and he checked out the podcast, and he said, he enjoyed the conversation, totally agreed with everything we said about the hooligans and the scare that we had, but he genuinely sounded impressed and offered sincere, profound compliments to how good our podcast sounds. And I said, that's Monty Bach, our producer. He brings it every night. He brings it every week.
Makes 82 nights a year.
Makes us sound better than we should ever sound. And I think that I took some pride in that. Hey, our podcast, we're a bunch of hooligans ourselves, a bunch of yahoos, a bunch of ne'er-do-wells, and we sound professional.
Like so, what I think the listeners don't like, he puts a lot of bass in your voice.
That's so
you
true.
Sound, you sound like a grown man. People don't know this, but off the air, you sound like Alvin Seville.
Yes. That's connecting with the kids. I was thinking more. Les Nessman. I thought you're gonna go there for another current reference. But no, it's we appreciate you listening. We appreciate you tuning in. Tom's got a plane to catch.
You're a Les Nessman, and they make you sound like a Venus flytrap.
That's great. The three listeners out there understood that. Those three, I think, probably enjoyed it.
A friend of the podcast, Ben Baby, lives in Cincinnati now, and he has no idea what we're talking about.
No. Ben Baby also considers himself old, and that's how old we are, because Ben Baby is not close to old. Anyway, thank you for listening. Thank you for indulging this trip through time to 1980s sitcoms. Check them out sometime. WKRP in Cincinnati. Great, great show. Thanks for tuning into the Spurs Insider. Thanks for pondering the future of Jeremy Sohan with us. Thanks for coming back and seeing us next week. Until then, take care of each other and keep it real.